listeners. You're with Selena and Season Gardener Terry today, and we are going to talk about gardening in the dry spell. And, well, the weather has been really lovely, but have you been working hard in the garden, Terry?
I have been working so hard in the garden, inappropriately in a way, because I've developing a new area, and this was the wrong summer to choose to do that, because it means, A, working in the heat, although much of it is under big trees, but then having the water to sustain those little starters, you know.
Oh.
I've just got to get them through to the first rains, and then I'm sure they'll look after themselves.
Now, is it a good idea to start a garden in this kind of weather?
I wouldn't have thought so, but I wasn't anticipating it. I started in about late October, digging it over and prepping it and getting all the plants in, because I order a lot of my plants online. And, you know, suddenly I've got, you know, a big stash of plants, and regardless of the weather, they're safer in the ground than they are sitting outside somewhere.
Otherwise they'll dry up in your pots.
That's right.
Oh no, that's just, yeah. Sometimes, yeah, you have to, you can't really wait for the season. If you got your plants there, they need to...
Get in the ground. And, you know, so it's just meant a very rigorous watering regime, and I'm sort of amazed that so far Auckland hasn't had a watering ban.
Yes. Other parts of the country, they are restricting watering, and some are relying just on tank water, and they're running out of even that.
Yep.
But Auckland, no.
Well, I know people out at Piha who were, one of them was congratulating himself on the fact that he ordered it, he ordered his water tank like 3 weeks before they would run out. And as it turned out, you know, they had something like a 6 week waiting list, so they were sort of came to the top just in time. But there are people out there that are waiting 6 and 8 weeks to get water, as same as on Waiheke.
So maybe the garden isn't a high priority for those people.
No. I wouldn't think so.
But for us gardeners, maybe we need to work with the dry spell, because I was thinking this time of year, perfect for drying flowers and also killing off your kaikuyu.
Yes, I wish. I'm not seeing that happening, although the other one that does, that I have, I cleared an entire sort of bank of wandering willy several droughts ago.
Yes.
Simply because I saw it wilting up, and I thought, gosh, you know, if I rake that off now, it would actually not be leaving stuff alive in the soil.
Yeah.
And that was some years ago, and I raked this whole face.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been recurring. So look out for the wandering willy getting very sad.
Yes.
And rake
just
it away.
Rake it off.
And, you know, even when you rake it when it's fleshy, it leaves living pieces on the ground, so you don't really get rid of it. You reduce it, but it comes back again. When it's as dry as this, you may not see it again if you do it now.
So dry as in crispy dry?
Well, you know, the leaves are sort of folded up, and the stems are kind of skinny, you know. They're not generating anything out of the soil.
Yeah.
And, of course, once it's raked away, that soil is getting even more baked, and any remnants
cooked. Speaking of cooking, with the kaikuyu, if you actually want to get rid of it, good time to do it now. Clear plastic over it and cook it, like solarize it. And then when you take off that plastic, it has to be dry and sunny. Then, your kaikuyu is going to be cooked, and then you can just rake it out. And
that sounds like yet another job for me to do, Selena.
Oh, no, I'm just adding to
Well, mine's all spilling in from next door. I don't have it naturally, but I have neighbours on either side that have a lot of invasive species pouring over.
Okay, so we're talking about gardening in the dry spell. If you're a crazy gardener like Terry here, and we are gardening still, and putting in plants, what kind of plants are we considering for the dry parts of our garden?
Types of plants. Well, actually, before we go to types of plants, because it's quite a long list,
I can imagine.
I'm just thinking that we should think about the dry spaces in Auckland, which are not like ordinary dry gardens.
Okay.
I mean, we look at plants like the list that I've got includes plants from South Africa, from Mexico, from Australia, of course, and you know, California.
Yeah.
Those places have very different soil makeup. They are permanently dry, crumbly soils
sandy.
In many cases.
Yeah.
So we have the problem of getting things into ground that is rock hard clay, which has been slimy wet clay, and then has baked off and cracked open, and so we've got the worst of both, if you like, because even if we do put dry gardens in now, they may well get drowned or washed away later
in
the rainy season. So it's about maybe prepping that ground. Digging over, maybe putting in some pebbly materials, putting a lot of mulch in there that's opening it up, just getting the structure broken up a bit.
Yeah.
And once you've got that, I'm on the hillside, so the other thing is terracing or making even just, you know, half a metre square little bowls, I call them, you know, that you can plant into, making sure that the downhill side is protected from everything washing out, you know. And in some cases I use old pieces of pottery and stuff like that to sort of make a little rim around the top so that the stuff doesn't wash away.
Oh, okay.
And so prepping that ground and mulching, but also taking into account that if you do have these dry patches and you're on clay, that, you know, Auckland does give us the advantage of being able to grow some shade trees. So your ground doesn't have to be forever dry.
Exactly.
So getting some shade trees, and not now, in autumn, amongst those patches. And they may just be shrubs and things where you're creating little microclimates.
Yeah.
In which case, if you've got those, then you start looking to... There's a handful of natives that will do well, but looking to those countries we talked about for the sort of things that can go in there. But, you know, there's also some really traditional ones. There's in New Zealand, the leptospermum, which is the tea tree.
Yes.
There's astelias, which are really handsome. Geranium being the Mediterranean version of all this. And actually, speaking Mediterranean, thinking about... all those wonderful geraniums, especially the ones with the perfumed or, you
the
know, flavoured. Yeah, the scented ones are great.
They've been really great.
Because they're hardy. They are hardier than the flowering ones.
Yes, and they've lasted to... Because they're a bit furry, aren't they, the leaves?
Yeah, they've got all that.
So they will retain the water in that because, somehow it traps the moisture in there so it can survive the hot.
Mm. And... The other Mediterranean ones are things like lavender. What else? I'm looking here at some Mexican ones. All the salvias. Salvias, essentially a sage from Mexico.
Yeah.
The grevilleas. The Australians are sort of thick with all this stuff, really. All the grevilleas. In South Africa, you've got the proteas and the leucodendrons.
Yes.
Bit more planning involved than that. I actually think probably working your garden from the ground, aside from the shade trees that we might put in autumn, is to start building it up from the bottom. Although, you know, lavender, making a sort of a lavender hedge or surround or cluster where you're going to plant smaller things in between, because in the end you're covering that soil as best you can.
Yeah, you want to shade the soil.
Shade the soil out.
Scorched over.
And one of my favourites actually is cistus, which is the rock rose.
Rock rose.
Which is actually, just for those who are that way inclined with medicinals, is one of the components, a key component of rescue remedy.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Plumbago.
Yes.
Plumbago just... I mean, I've got several of them and they're just incorrigible, really. They just go off all over the place.
Yeah.
And give you huge amounts of ground cover.
Yeah.
And again, something that you can put maybe in the back of a border or something that sort of allows some protection to the space that you're putting it into.
Yeah. Mine are against a sort of wooden fence and I'm going to make a hedge of them and just clip them back to a hedge shape.
Mm. So they're clippable, they flower, and of course the blue flower, blue the bees flowers. Love them. The bees really need all the help they can get. Speaking of blue flowers, I think probably I don't have one, but it's on my list to try and establish one, is the Echium. Now, there's quite a few Echiums, but the the really big sucker, you know. What's that? Fatuosum or something?
Fatuosum. Echium.
And
beautiful purple flowers.
Beautiful purple flowers and spires of them.
Yes.
Again, quite a big plant in terms of, you know, 1.5, 2 or more metres.
It looks like a birthday cake.
It's just, these spires and absolutely covered in these purple flowers, and the bees are just thrilled about it. So that's one. What else have we got? Some of the more reedy kind of things. I like the Scizirrhynchium, which makes a nice broad leaf, which in itself is attractive, a bit like an iris or some of those kind of leaves. And then they put up spires with, you know, long seeding heads on them, which have little lemony flowers all the way up them, which ripen quite quickly and throw seeds. So you could hopefully spread from that. Another one that behaves in a similar manner, although needs a bit more water, is Aristea, which is got a beautiful glaucous blue kind of leaf, again, long, sharp, pointy leaf, and makes purple and blue flowers. Again, I'm a bit addicted to the purple and blue. Speaking of purple and blue, you've got hardened bergeria on the climber.
Yes, I've got that one. Very hardy and, tough leaves.
Another tough Australian.
Yes, Australian plants.
And ice plants. You know, the sheer joy of a bank of ice plants.
Beautiful.
Absolutely
covered
wonderful
in flowers in their season. Mm. Just like, if you get the pink ones, it's like a big, huge pink
shawl. I mean, actually, Spanish shawl's probably another one as well, although you'd probably establish that in a damper time.
Yeah.
Once it's established, actually, it tends towards being invasive, to say the least.
Beware of that one.
Yeah.
Just plant it where it's not going to take over the whole garden.
Yeah. You do have to. It pulls away quite easily, but you do have to keep an eye on it. And the other thing that I've sort of found a list of was the dry weather herbs. Again, if we're talking about the Mediterranean look and feel, all the Mediterranean plants like the lavenders and the, olive trees. If you're going to be planting some shelter, think about olives.
Yes.
They're a handsome tree. They go very deep and they're really strong.
Mm.
And, of course, not to forget grapes.
Yes,
grapes love hard, tough ground.
Well,
I mean, you go down to Marlborough. Marlborough is, essentially all rock. Riverstone, plains of riverstone. And as long as the roots can get down between the stones, and they can get through clay, no trouble. This is, how our Dalmatian cousins put the vineyards in right through West Auckland.
Yeah.
And even though that's not necessarily where you'll get your best vintages from, because a lot of those have moved to other parts of the country, having an eating grape in clay is no bad thing, and it does give you the great cover of shade and things. I actually use it to shade my house and my deck.
Yeah.
But you could shade the garden with it, put up some kind of frame for it to grow over. And then think about the herbs that go with all that Mediterranean stuff. And the ones listed here are mullein, which is not something I'm familiar with, but mullein is referred to here as a friendly herb, easy to grow, soft to touch. Children are drawn to the furry nature and the unique appearance. It doesn't say how you use it, so I'm not sure how you use mullein. Borage, of course, which, again, our friendly, bee-friendly stuff, wonderful blue flowers, and they're edible themselves. Echinacea, which, of course, comes out of Mexico again. A whole rainbow of colours, and about every 3 years you can divide it so you can enlarge your crop.
My echinacea, I thought it would be purple, but actually it flowered and it was yellow.
It's a bit like zinnia, is another big Mexican favourite, just as a flower, because of the wonderful range of colours and things.
Mm.
Sage, of course, and sages are just, they're so tough.
Sage is good. Especially, I like the purple one.
The grey leaf and the back back of the leaf and the tough leaf structure. You know, you can tell straight away which ones are the dry plants simply because of their wonderful tough leaves and things. But there's a lot of sages, as you say, different colours, and the salvias are in the same group.
Yeah.
Rosemary.
Yes.
I have more success with the upright rosemary than the sprawling one, but the sprawling one would be useful, you know, to cover a bank to help, again, cover that soil from cracking up. But again, it will go in a damper ground, and something maybe if you planted in autumn, it will give you that good cover for the coming year. Lavender, we've mentioned. Calendula.
Yeah.
Apparently quite drought resistant. I'm watching my calendula at the moment and they're looking a bit kind of, but they'll come right, I think.
Yeah, they will self-seed anyway. They'll come again.
And thyme, wonderful, wonderful thyme, and there's so many thymes.
Yes, we talked about that last week.
I love thyme. And savoury. It's definitely, it's a lovely cooking herb and it's good for teas. And again, it's tough enough to deal with the climate. And one that they have here, which probably for New Zealanders, dandelion, which we all go, oh, there's dandelions in the lawn. Dandelion, of course, was used a lot as a kind of substitute for coffee, dandelion root. It's got a lot of medicinal qualities and it will tolerate all sorts of crazy conditions. You know, you see it growing out of cracks in the concrete, so you know that it can deal with drought.
Did you know that dandelion's related to lettuce?
No. Yeah, sort of like an endive or something.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about eating it, but you can apparently and get really good results. And, of course, the chooks love it. So dandelion to be considered as a herb that you might grow. So that's some of them. There's a lot of others on this list, but
that's a huge list. But yeah, I had a little list of my own, but you pretty much got most of those plants and all the herbs. But one or a couple that wasn't mentioned in terms of flowers. Gazania.
Oh, gazanias, yeah.
Very tough. They are. With the silvery leaf, you know it's going to endure the heat, and they love the hot sun and baking. They're from South Africa, and a lot of plants from South Africa just adore the hot.
Yep, they certainly. Again, breaking up the soil. I planted some gazanias this year. Some are going, some are going, help. Mm-hmm. One of them just disappeared on me and shriveled up and died. This was into the hard, cracked clay, and the one, you know, 3 inches away is doing fantastically. So I think what you get is you get little streams of water, you know, subterranean or whatever, and if you can just get enough for it to reach down and touch something, that's good.
Agapanthus.
Agapanthus featured large in this book that we've talked about, which is called Gardens of the Sun by Trevor Nottle. He's looking globally at all sorts of things. Euphorbias come up a lot well, which
list.
I think euphorbia is fine. Aggies, he lists something like about 25 varieties.
Oh.
But, you know, aggies are a bit of a challenge in our environment.
Well, in that book, we both had the same book, funnily enough, Gardens of the Sun by Trevor Nottle. And I noticed, I don't know if you read the whole thing, but he talked a lot about yuccas and agaves, and I just do not like those.
Well, you have to be so careful of them, particularly the yuccas.
Yeah.
Because they build big, strong trunks, and they go down into the ground, and they're almost impossible to kill, so you have to be very committed to them.
And if you cut them down, then they'll just sprout again with even more spiky.
I don't mind the agaves and the aloes. The agaves are softer, they're easily moved, they're not hard to get rid of, so they can take up a big space. I've got a patch of them that came from one plant that I was given that's now considerably bigger than that, but it's under some palm trees and it's up against a pond area that you just want it sort of, enclosed by, you know, and they do that job. And if I want to move them any time, then I can. And once again, they're sheltering the ground a bit. But certainly the yuccas.
No, I would not recommend planting them.
No, I'd avoid them like crazy.
Yeah.
The other, well, we didn't mention the succulents and...
Yes, the succulents and sedums for those, especially those parts maybe near your house on the north side and it's under the eaves because that does not get the water, the rain. Mm. They're good for those areas and in pots as well.
And the echeverias are so cool looking.
Yeah.
And maybe start them in a pot and get them up to a size. I mean, they do seem to survive most things. I've planted a lot of little succulents that I had in pots this year where I've got a bluestone wall that's been moved and opened up an area, and I'm putting a lot of succulents of all sorts in there. Mm. And they're beginning to establish little beds. Again, they'll be better next year simply because they need some time to establish. But the echeverias have those lovely flower stems.
Yes. I've got a few, and one's not even on any soil or any... Mm. It's just sitting on a saucer tray of... Mm. Not concrete, but cement, you know.
Like a tofu mix or something.
Yeah, and it doesn't need any soil and it's still alive. It hasn't dried up. It's just getting its moisture from the, coming off the little lid of the bottom bottom of the pot.
Yeah. Well, speaking of things that don't need much in the way of water, it's bromeliads. Now, you know, they appear in lists for the subtropicals, but in fact, all you've got to do is anchor them. Their roots are only there to hold on to whatever you stick them into. Now, I've got a 4 metre high stump, for want of a better word, top taken off a tree but kept the stump. It's quite a big stump. And I'm planting all over it. With things like orchids and bromeliads and stuff. And really, all you need to do is secure them. They're a bit like air plants, really.
Yeah.
And you can make big beds of those that don't care what the weather is as long as something falls into their cup.
Yes. Do you need to keep their cups topped up with water?
I've been doing that, I don't know, once every few weeks I'll give them a bit of a squirt.
Mm.
But that's really not soaking the ground or anything like that. It's just putting something into their cups.
Okay.
And except for the ones on the tree, which I am trying to get them to dig in a bit to the bark and start the sort of rot and dig in process.
Mm-hmm.
The ones in the garden proper need very little help.
Yeah.
And, you know, they really don't care. So you can make kind of quite exotic looking gardens using things like echeverias and bromeliads and, as you say, the sedums. And you just don't have to worry about them. And even if they do get a bit sad, they'll be back.
Yeah.
With the first rains.
So we're not scarce of plants that actually like the dry. So
I think we need to think about water in other ways as well. Like, I think all of us need to think of alternative ways for finding water for the gardens, like grey water systems.
Yes.
I personally feel a bit aggrieved that if we're going to be a city for the future, that water care has disincentivised grey water systems because your water bill comes from the water that comes onto your property.
Mm-hmm.
So everything for your washing machine and your bath and so on is coming on, and then you're charged a big discharge fee. But if you had a grey water system and you were discharging it into the garden, wouldn't it be nice if you could, if you know, like at some stage you made an application to council to say, look, I'm putting a grey water system in, can that be reflected in my water bill, please?
Yes.
And I would say, let's say 70% of the water would go into the garden, there's 30% that wouldn't, you would want it to go down the drain, and that would be reflected in your bill, because at the moment, you know, there's quite big charges on water, and there's nothing to say grey water, which does cost you a little bit to set up, you know, that should be incentivised by rewarding you for not putting it back into the system.
You're not over... loading the system.
Correct.
And then, because it is getting old, and then it's affecting our beaches and all the downstreams and all that.
That's right. And if you're putting it into the garden, you're growing cover, you're improving the environment for the city overall, even if it's just your garden. You get enough of those and it's doing good work, and it's reuse. Recycle.
Yeah.
And do not have to pay three times.
Exactly. That reminds me, Terry, when you're talking about the grey water, I was reading about Prince Charles's garden in Highgrove.
Okay.
And he's very into the organic way of gardening. And he had got the system for his house and garden, everything composting, or it used to go down the incinerator and be chewed up, but he stopped that and made all the food scraps go into gardener's compost. And then he also put in a system where all the wastewater goes into reed beds and then it gets diverted into his garden.
Mm.
So he was able to get that all set up.
Mm. Rain gardens too.
Yes.
Be nice. I like reeds actually, and there's some talk at the moment about the amount of wetlands that have been destroyed around New Zealand.
Yes.
And, if you could feed your grey water through a reed garden, you're going to get it cleansed doubly.
So what the reeds do is they filter the water and you just need like a few beds of them and it will, drink all the water and make it clean again. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, they're wonderful. The other thing is, like, there was a drought in Auckland winter, God knows, a long time ago when it was Echo City time out west, and we were encouraged to get water tanks, which I got one, I don't know, it's not very huge, maybe 750 litres or something.
Yeah.
There's a whole range of quite handsome and designer water tanks now where you can be taking water off the roof and you've always got a stash for the garden. It's probably not enough to water it every day, depending on what size you get. If you get a small one like mine, you wouldn't water, all the time from it.
Yeah.
But when we get to the stage, which any minute now they're going to say stop watering your garden, you've got a tank full of stuff there still.
Terry, do you know if any the newer houses being built in Auckland have to have a tank, or is it just...
I have no idea. Oh. I'd be delighted if it were so, but I'm not holding my breath for those sorts of initiatives.
Oh.
And the other thing is, to keep thinking about how you water, and by hand watering and going straight to the roots rather than spraying and sprinkling and where it's all falling on the leaves and, in fact, not being very kind to the leaves because it tends to burn them.
Yeah.
They get scorched and so on. Even little things like before I refill the kettle in the morning, whatever water is still in there from the day before, I water the houseplants with that.
Yeah.
And it's actually a good reminder. Oh, I've got the jug in my hand. Time to water the houseplant.
As long as it's not boiling water.
No, it's the overnight remnants. So it'd be good to hear from people in places like Waiheke and Auckland's West Coast as to what they're doing. I don't know if they can write to you on that score.
Well, you can email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you have really good tips on how to save water and keeping your garden nice and green during a dry spell. So, we're keen to hear from you.
So, just going back to some of the ones I spotted on my list, the Nerum oleanders. Now, oleanders in New Zealand, everybody goes, oh my God, they're poisonous. Well, yes, they are, but so are dozens of other garden plants. And you do see them in places like California and Spain, just whole hedgerows of those gorgeous flowers. And, if you're thinking of building a dry shelter belt, that's one of them.
Okay.
What other ones? Lamandras. Those lamandras, which have become very popular.
Yeah.
They're mostly designed for that purpose.
Yeah.
So now, have you got a plant of the week this week?
Well, we have not much time. We have so many plants of the week, actually.
Yes, that's right.
But I'm going to pick gazania as the top pick from our list, just because they love the dry and you can't really go wrong with them.
And they're so pretty. The whole banks of them look fabulous.
Okay, that is all we have time for. Thank you so much, Terry, for sharing all about the dry garden plants. Really interesting.
Yeah, well, we're all going to have to learn a lot more about it. I don't know a huge amount about it, but it's coming down the pipe. We need to know about this stuff.
Okay, happy gardening, everyone, and enjoy the sun. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page, or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.